This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to the edition of the SI Boxing Podcast. Joining me on the podcast again this week, second week in a row, because I get to see him 2 weeks in a row. The Latin Snake, the former junior middleweight champion, DAZN boxing analyst Sergio Mora. What's up, Sergio? Oh, come on. With the like this Invisalign stuff cannot become a thing. Like, it can't.
I took them out before we started, just to be considerate.
Does your wife think you are as disgusting as I am?
I think everybody thinks I'm disgusting, but she married me because I'm disgusting.
Ah, okay. That's wonderful.
Sorry, honey.
That's wonderful.
By the way, I got to call our agent if I'm going to be consistently back-to-back on your podcast. I mean, this is getting ridiculous already. My knowledge costs something.
Yeah. What does it cost exactly? What else would you be doing right now? You challenged me to a game of chess downstairs.
Yeah, I know, and I'm going to beat you.
Okay. I find that unlikely.
We'll see.
Okay. We will see about that. All right. Lot to get into today. I want to talk about Usyk's return to the ring as a heavyweight this weekend. We're going to get into that. First, though, we should say thoughts with the family and with Errol Spence, who was involved in a car accident, a high-speed accident. My information is that it's not life-threatening, as we record this on Thursday afternoon. My information is also that he was speaking. He was conscious at different points during the day. So that's a good sign. We don't have any other information, but our best thoughts are to Errol Spence, and hopefully he has a quick recovery. That's a tough thing to see. There's some video of it out there, Sergio, and that's tough to watch.
Yeah, hopefully it's a wake-up call because, you know, on a smaller scale, every world champion's been through that, where you win the world title, especially if you're undefeated. You feel you're invincible. You feel you're unstoppable, and you feel everything is different for you because you're a world champion. I'm just putting myself in his shoes, and, you know, I've been there and done that. Not in a Ferrari, but, you know, I've gotten my close calls in situations like that. And, you know, hopefully it's a wake-up call for him because he can lose a lot in just a split second. I thought of, right away when you told me about this story this morning, I thought of Salvador Sanchez when he died tragically in a Porsche accident. And, I mean, it could just end like that, your whole future, and you never know what you could have become. And Errol Spence hopefully is all right.
Yeah, definitely. Thoughts with Errol Spence. Hopefully does make that fast recovery. Of course, you know, you drive that Volkswagen Jetta of yours there, so.
Safest car you can possibly buy.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump right into it. Last weekend, Gennady Golovkin came back trying for another piece or to get another piece of that middleweight championship. He was a strong favorite headed into that fight with Sergey Derevyanchenko. A lot of people believed it would be kind of a coronation type of fight for Golovkin. He'd win easily. Early on, it looked like it was going to be all Golovkin. The first round, he picked up a knockdown. The second round, he opened up a significant cut above the right eye of Derevyanchenko. Thought it might be an easy night for Gennady. And all of a sudden, things changed. From round three on, Derevyanchenko fought, I thought, the best fight of his career. He went out there, left it all on the line, lost a close decision. But after that fight, Sergio, it seemed like there were more questions about Golovkin than there were answers about them. You know, people thought this would be his bounce-back type of fight. He beat Steve Rolls. This was a chance to establish himself atop the middleweight division. What did you think of Golovkin's performance?
You know, there's a saying that goes, you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Well, if you want to make the sport of boxing laugh, tell him your plans, or tell it your plans. That's exactly what happened there. For two rounds, it looked like Golovkin was going to follow his game plan, get the knockout, get the big drama show back at MSG, and get that Canelo trilogy. But, you know, this sport is just like that. And luckily for him, he was able to get the decision, because in a lot of people's eyes, including ours, we thought that Derevyanchenko deserved the decision, the close decision. But either way, it wasn't a robbery. Golovkin fought an incredible fight, but even more incredible, in my opinion, was Sergey Derevyanchenko. I mean, to fight through what he fought with, not only the knockdown and the cut and, you know, getting hurt and coming back. Following the game plan was the most impressive thing, because I could tell that Andre Rozier and Derevchenko had a great game plan. And Rozier's already been there fighting against in the other corner of two other fighters in Curtis Stevens and, of course, Daniel Jacobs. So he's been there across from Golovkin before. And third time should have been his charm, and it wasn't. You know, and it, like I said, it wasn't, you know, a robbery. It was nothing fishy. It's just the judges saw it for Golovkin's way. But Golovkin had to swallow a lot of pride, man, because that's what happens. You know, you expect to take someone out like that. And even when you get an early knockdown, in history proves this, that when you get an early knockdown in boxing, you think it's going to be over. And this happened to me. Unbelievable, but it's happened to me too. You get a knockdown early, you think you're going to go for the stoppage, and you don't get it. Next thing you know, you got 8, 9, 10 more rounds to go, and you're like fighting for every single round and minute, and it just turns into a disaster. It almost turned into a disaster for Golovkin, and it was because of that early knockdown and high expectations. But he got away with it. He got the win. It was a hard win. A lot of questions got brought up, and I think we're finally seeing the end of a amazing, brutal career of his. And hopefully he's able to get that cash out with that trilogy, because that's what it's going to be, a cash out. Canelo is one of the most devastating body punchers in boxing, and we've finally seen Golovkin get hurt.
Yeah, to address the issue of the scoring, I don't think it was a robbery either. I scored the fight 114-113 for Derevchenko, but I always say when the judges swing it a round or two or even three the other way, I have no problem with that type of stuff. I mean, I readily admitted on the broadcast I saw three or four swing rounds, and if the judges scored them the other way, that's fine. And even Lou DiBella and Keith Conley, who are the promoter and manager of Derevchenko respectively, they didn't call it a robbery either. It was a close fight that Derevchenko, unfortunately for him, came out on the wrong side. Now, to address Golovkin, one of the unknowns we have coming out of that fight is just how sick he was going into that fight. Now, you're a fighter, so a fighter is not going to make an excuse, and Golovkin didn't make an excuse when he was standing there in the ring. But Eddie Hearn, his co-promoter, said after the fact that he was sick during the week. Jonathan Banks, his trainer, said the sickness was horrible during the week. He used that word, horrible, during the week. So I wonder how much of what we saw was what you said, Golovkin aging and we're seeing the end of a great fighter. How much of it was a combination of Golovkin aging a little bit, but also being under the weather? The reason I look at the sickness, Sergio, is because fourth or fifth round, he looked tired. And that's not what I'm used to seeing. Like, if Golovkin isn't as fast as he used to be, or...
No, he was winded. I even called it on air. I said, that's a second heavy breath he took in one round. He was winded.
Yeah, like that. And I don't know, do you attribute that to age? I don't know. He's never looked tired before. He's always been able to go the full distance in, you know, the Canelo fights, certainly, and he hasn't looked tired in previous fights before. That's granted, some of them ended, many of them ended well before the final bell.
It's a little bit of three things. It's age, maybe the sickness, and like I touched on earlier in this conversation, when you knock down an opponent so early and you think it's going to be over, the adrenaline's going from 0 to 100 so quick. You're like, okay, great. It's going to be a quick night in the office. And you try to kill him. And you try to go after it and try to knock his head off. Next thing you know, the guy survives. Next thing you know, he comes back. Next thing you know, he's hurting you. Next thing you know, you're falling behind on the cards. And the rest is, you know, it can go either way. I've been there. I've done that. I fought sick. I fought through cuts. I fought through knockdowns. It's a long way to the 12th round. It's 36 minutes of fighting and a knockdown in the first round, in the first minute or two. I mean, you still got half an hour of fighting left. So it's a little bit of that and the sickness. Look, he looked sick in the fighter meeting. He really did. He looked exhausted. He looked frustrated with all the Canelo questions. But he looked a little jaundiced to me, a little weak to me. His answers were a little bit, even when he laughed and he said a joke, he said a joke, I remember, a little sex joke, and that should have been hilarious and funny, and he just kind of like okay. And I as a fighter, I don't want to make excuses for another fighter, all right? So I'm not going to say that's what it was. It was a little bit of everything, but he did look sick to me.
So the question becomes, will there be a rematch? Should there be a rematch? I think it's important to note that no matter whether you say Derevchenko deserves a rematch or not, and I think he does, the reality is Golovkin's team is not going to make any moves until after November 2nd when Canelo Alvarez comes out of that fight against Sergey Kovalev. Win or lose, it seems more likely than not that Canelo is going to drop out of the 175-pound division. I don't know if he's going to drop all the way down to 160 right after. That might be a little bit too much too fast, but that doesn't preclude him fighting Golovkin at, say, 168 for that fake WBA title that he still has, that Canelo still has around his waist. So I think they're going to wait and see what happens with Canelo. Now, but if you're Canelo Alvarez, are you watching that fight and thinking, you know what, I can dispatch this guy in May and be done with it, that Golovkin is not anywhere near the guy I first took on a few years ago? I mean, is that crossing your mind if you're Canelo Alvarez?
Yeah, crossing your mind, but I think his pride is going to maybe make him think twice. He doesn't want to give Golovkin that payday. He had his record blemished. Both of them had their records blemished with that draw that was controversial. They both thought they won. The second fight was controversial, and Canelo finally got that nod. But there's this resentment. See what happens when you're missing your Invisalign?
Okay.
There's this resentment on Canelo's side where he doesn't want to have to answer these questions anymore. He's already trained for Golovkin. That at first it was respect. The second time was a little bit of frustration, and I'll show you. This third time around, it's gonna be it's just anger. It's not frustration. It's anger. It's a little bit of, I've done this and everyone's still not happy. Fuck everybody. There's a little bit of that going on, and then there's this. I need to continue. I need to just go on with my career. That's a chapter in the past. I want to look forward and what's the next chapter. And I can relate to that third one. I can relate to let's move on, because I've had split decisions. I've had draws, and when they were tough fights and they talked about rematch, I just quietly said no. Let's move on. I did that with Alvin Ayala, who you mentioned last time. And I did it with another fighter I won't mention. But, yeah, there was two fighters where I didn't want to fight him again.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get it. And that was a life-and-death type of career fight for Golovkin. I don't think Gennady Golovkin would duck a rematch from him. In fact, if he can't get Canelo, well, look, if he can't get Canelo, I think the most likely path they're going to take is to go to his mandatory, who is, I'm not going to butcher the name on air here, but the Polish kid that fought on the undercard on last Saturday night. That's a fight that could take place January or February. And then maybe you move on to a fight against Derevchenko in the summer if Canelo is not going to fight you. But if I'm Canelo Alvarez, I get everything you said, and I agree with it. There's a personal aspect to all this. There's a control aspect to all this. But if you just do this and beat him, you can dictate everything from there on out. You can decide whoever you want to fight in September. If you want to fight Jaime Munguia in September, you can do it. Like, DAZN's not going to block you. They just want to get those two in the ring and have them square off so they can get the fight they were hoping for.
You don't understand Mexican pride, man. In Canelo's mind, and in a lot of people's mind that are Mexican, they say que se vaya la chingada, man. I've been there, done that. You know, he can go screw himself, basically. I've already did my job. I've done it twice already, and I've had two long camps. I did all the press tour. I beat this man twice, and that's it. If you guys aren't satisfied, you're never going to be satisfied. I'm moving on with my career, with my life, and that's that. I'm the boss. Canelo is the boss. He's making the decisions. I'm moving on.
If Derevchenko doesn't get the rematch, I mean, Derevchenko has now proven in two of his last three fights that he is a television-friendly fighter. The fight with Daniel Jacobs was interesting. It was a close fight. They went back and forth. Good action in that fight. This fight against Golovkin, it was a terrific fight, high-energy fight, had the crowd at MSG fired up, social media was fired up over it. Where does Derevchenko go for here? What would you do if you were
Andrade,
him?
Demetrius Andrade.
I'd love to see it.
I would love to see it.
I think it's a good style fight, too.
And it's a good style fight, yeah. Sergey Derevchenko, he fights really good in compact, concise punches, and we learned that he could back up a power puncher. Andrade's not a power puncher, but you need to respect his power. He's a distance fighter. If you need to close that southpaw left angle, left-handed angle of punching, and Derevchenko has that amateur pedigree, and we proved that power is not going to intimidate him. So that'll be really good, especially coming off the momentum of this fight. And it's a fight that could easily be made with Lou DiBella and DAZN working together with Eddie Hearn. I would love to see that, you know, as a main event. Or maybe even as an undercard on another Canelo fight or a Golovkin fight.
Oh, I think it's a main event. I mean,
no, I agree. Yeah.
Derevchenko Andrade, yeah. Like, that's definitely a main event type of fight. Look, that's a world championship fight.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you want it on the mega stage, you put it under a Canelo undercard. That way, if these two guys are going under the radar and they're both championship caliber fighters, and you want them to really get the eyes they deserve, you put them on a co-main event with a superstar. That's what I think you do.
Well, I think yes. Look, I agree with you. One of my favorite fights in recent memory was the Mayweather fight. I think it was it Mayweather Canelo. When Danny Garcia fought Lucas Matisse on the undercard
That was a promotion.
Tremendous co-main event. That's what a co-main event really should be. And I mean, look, we don't need to go too far off topic here, but I think one of the problems in boxing in general has been that not enough attention has been paid to these undercards. Look, I said on the air last Saturday, I didn't think that the undercard that was put together for the Golovkin fight was any good at all. You know, the preliminary fights, I don't think that they did anything for anyone. Yet Ali Akhmedov, who's a nice prospect, 24 years old, he's fighting a no-hoper in the ring in his fight. Then you go to the two fights that supported Golovkin. I mean, you had Madrimov fighting on that card. He fought a guy that he walked through. I mean, I think you need to beef up these cards. I mean, I'm disappointed, frankly, Sergio, that Andrade isn't on the Canelo card in general. Like, not against Derevchenko.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And look, Ryan Garcia versus Duno is a good fight, but I'd make that fight the opener of the card, and I'd bring Andrade in, and I don't care who he fights. Like, honestly, it could be one of those fights where he could beat up on somebody. Just get people to start thinking about Demetrius Andrade against Canelo Alvarez. That needs to happen.
Yeah, and that's what I just touched on. You need to put him on a superstar's undercard, like Canelo, or maybe even a Golovkin or a Jacobs. But you need to have him with an A side, and he can be right under there. Because if he's going to headline, unless he's headlining at the Dunkin' Donuts Center in Rhode Island, that's the only place he's going to fill up a house. And they got great fans there. No knock on that. But you want him in Vegas. You want him at the Staples Center. You want him in MSG. And he's not going to headline there by himself. He needs a dancing partner. So put him on the undercard of that. Right before the Canelo comes out and fights, put him on there. Hopefully he gets a great win where people are still talking about it. And then Canelo comes out, takes care of business. And then their imagination start running. Wait a minute. How about Andrade and Canelo? Because right now, Andrade is not on anybody's radar as far as a fight for Canelo.
Why do you think promoters don't pay enough attention to these undercards? Now, granted, in the aftermath of Golovkin Derevchenko, nobody was talking about the undercard because the main event fight was so great. I mean, why do you think promoters don't put as much into it anymore? I mean, back in the day, Don King invests a lot of money in undercards times.
You answered your own question. They don't pay attention to the undercard because they don't pay the fighters enough. And back in the day, in the 80s, when you had, I can't believe, one of my favorite cards, it was Chavez fought, I forgot who, and then Terry Norris was on the undercard, and then two other champions. I can't remember who it was, but it was four great champions, and it was like in the early 90s. I forget what that card was called, but it'll come to me. I mean, yeah, that was a heyday of boxing, the 80s and early 90s. And now you realize you can get, you know, millions of pay-per-view buys just by the main event.
Well, you don't get millions. Like, nobody, the million.
Floyd Mayweather. I mean, Floyd Mayweather did it.
He's been gone for years.
Consistently.
Now.
He did it consistently.
But he's been gone. Nowadays, you don't. You get Spence and Crawford who would do, like, you know, 250, 275. Like, that's it. I'm just saying, the money, though, is out there. Like, for example, in the card we saw this past weekend, I would have preferred to see Ali Akhmedov fight Alantes Fox. Like, that, you know, big kid, what's he got, one loss on his resume to Demetrius Andrade. That's a fight that Akhmedov could have used as a springboard if he won. because in the last year, he's only fought Marcus McDaniel, who had fought like once in 4 years. And then I already forgot the name of the guy he fought.
I don't like that fight.
Oh, come on. What do you mean you don't like
Dude,
that fight?
Dude, Alantis Fox is like 6'5". What the fuck are you going to be doing? How good are you going to look against a fighter that's 6'5"? I fought a fighter that's 6'5".
So you don't look good?
Hold on.
So if you don't look good, that's all that matters. Do you think that Akhmedov got something out of that last one he fought? Andrew Nelson, was
yes,
that his name?
Did.
What?
Yes. He knocked out his opponent faster than Errol Spence did it.
No, you're talking about two different guys.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
You're talking about two different guys.
Yeah, Ali Akhmedov. I'm sorry. You're talking about the super middleweight.
Yeah.
Madrimov, Akhmedov. Sorry. I agree with you on that one.
You're getting your Eastern European guys confused there, Sergio?
I did. No, I really did. But see, Akhmedov, what does he have? 16, 17 fights now?
I'm getting confused here. Maybe a few more than that. But look, he's at the point.
He's at the brink. Yeah, he's at the brink.
We got to start fighting guys that matter. And the same thing, by the way.
No. And he's a tall fighter, too. See, I was thinking of Madrimov, where he's a short fighter. No, he's a 154 pounder.
Now, you're not going to fight a guy. Like, I'm with you.
Yeah, I kind of mistook them. No, you're right.
Madrimov, though.
Akhmedov, he should be fighting someone. Yeah.
Okay, but here's the thing, too, about Madrimov. Like, the guy he fought with Barrera, the guy that fought Errol Spence.
That's what I was thinking of.
You know, he was only knocked out by Errol Spence before. That's fine, but Madrimov could have fought somebody like Willie Nelson. Like, Willie Nelson was available.
Willie Nelson was ready for that fight.
Willie Nelson has a good resume.
Once knocked out Tony Harrison. Israel Madrimov made a statement. He really did make a statement. It was a great knockout. He knocked out a guy that only has been stopped one time by Errol Spence, pound for pound, great fighter, boxer. And he did it earlier than him. I mean, that's a statement. It really
fine,
is a statement.
But Madrimov's team has said consistently they want him to be in world title contention. Like, they wanted a world championship shot in the first fight. They wanted to fight Munguia.
Yeah, I know.
The first fight. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know what Barrera necessarily does for you in that situation. I think Willie Nelson would have been a better stepping stone.
Styles make fights. I think a Willie Nelson makes sense now.
Well, look, I think we both agree that promoters need to put more time and more effort into some of these undercards. I'm not saying you make it like Don King did in the early 1990s, where you have world championship fights at every level. But if you're Golden Boy, go get Demetrius Andrade. Put him on the undercard. Put him against anybody. It's good business.
It's good business, and Andrade would do it. I think he'll swallow his pride.
Not even a question of swallowing pride. He's told me multiple times he would do it.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
There you go. Usually a fighter has too much pride and says, no, I want to be the A side. I want to be the main event. A lot of fighters bring that ego to the negotiating table, and that's when they start falling backwards. Andre's not in the position. He'll swallow his pride. He wants a Canelo fight. He'll do whatever it takes.
And he also needs people to watch him. Like, you mentioned the crowd that he draws. I'm talking about the ratings, like the number of viewers.
And he also needs knockout. We both agreed on this. He's an A-plus fighter. He performs at an A-plus level. He just needs that cherry on top of the sundae, which is a stoppage.
Yeah, Andrew and I did this after the Golovkin fight. We started yelling at each other about, you know, the Selecki fight. And I thought against Maciej Selecki that he could have done more in that fight. And he said, no, he's done enough. I think it could have been a statement win for him, and it wasn't. So that's where he and I.
But it was a masterclass performance.
But he's had a lot of those. He has not had a lot of stoppages. That's the big thing. He's knocked guys down. He knocked Walter Kautendakwa down, what, four times?
No, it's show business. I hear you. Show business. And, you know, the fans love the knockouts. And Andrade, he already proved that he has everything he can possibly offer as a boxer, as a professional fighter. But he needs to put that stamp on a perfect performance, and that's a knockout.
Look, it's a double-edged sword, because if you're entertaining, it means you're also getting hurt in the ring, or potentially getting hurt in the ring. And that's tough. That's tough. I recognize that. It's just there really is no other avenue to building your brand other than to be more entertaining when you're out there in the ring. All right, speaking of entertaining, Alexander Usyk, who is fighting this weekend, he is now fighting Chaz Witherspoon. There's been some issues with his opponents. Tyrone Spong tested positive for a banned substance. He is out. Spong, of course, a former kickboxer, but brought some significant power into that matchup, which is why I thought made it mildly intriguing. Chaz Witherspoon has not been a factor for a very long time, not since when he fights Seth Mitchell in 2014. I forget what it was.
Yeah, it was a while back.
He got knocked out by Seth Mitchell years ago, and since then he's fought very low level of opposition. Maybe because he's a veteran, he can make Usyk work, but this should be a pretty clear victory for Usyk. Let me get your thoughts on Usyk making the jump, because we have seen a lot of top-level fighters make the jump from cruiserweight to heavyweight. Evander Holyfield, certainly the most notable, and that's someone that Usyk looks up to. David Haye, a more recent example. Haye went on to win a piece of the heavyweight championship, beating Valuev in that fight. Do you look at Usyk as being that next guy? Does he have the talent and the strength to withstand it in the heavyweight division?
Oh, yeah. He has the talent, the strength, the confidence, the backing, the power. He has all of the above. And we mentioned, you know, one of the greatest cruiserweights in history, Evander Holyfield. He won his first title in his 12th fight, and Usyk did it in 10. So right there, he's already showing you that he's already gifted and advanced, but he brings a lot more to the table than just experience. He brings in a gold medal, 2018 Fighter of the Year. He's fought nothing but champions in his last 6-7 fights. He won the World Series of Boxing. I mean, he can win he's winning everything he could possibly think of. So that jump is not too far-fetched for me. I mean, it's just, 10-15 pounds, but you're fighting a guy that's not in front of you. He's not just going power for you. He has foot movement. He has technique. He uses and punches from angles. He's a southpaw. These are all factors right here. So, yes, I think he can bring – I mean, think about what Chris Bird did in the heavyweight division. Chris Bird was a middleweight in the Olympics, and he moved all the way to the heavyweight division and won a title there. So if Chris Bird can do it – I mentioned Chris Bird because he had foot movement and he moved – And he jumped up from a lower weight class to heavyweight division, but he was able to jump and become successful because of movement. James Toney is another fighter who was successful jumping up to heavyweight because he had defense and he didn't have foot movement, but he had that defense and he knew how to make you work for those punches. And Usyk has that. He has athleticism, he has defense, he has footwork, and he has power. I mean, he does have power as a cruiserweight, and we're not going to know how that translates into heavyweight division until he steps in there with a legitimate heavyweight.
Yeah, look, he stopped Tony Bellew, and Bellew had made the jump to heavyweight himself, had some success against David Haye in a couple of fights. I guess the only question you have is, does he have the chin to hold up to it? Because every time out, I mean, Usyk's not a small guy by any stretch, about 6'3", but he's, if he's going to fight at the top level, it's 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", some of these guys, how big they are, the Wilder, Joshua, Fury, among others. I think Usyk can go toe-to-toe with the likes of Derek Chisora, with Joseph Parker, but when he gets those top-tier guys, and look, he wants to get there, Sergio, sooner rather than later. Don't forget, the WBO rules state that their champion at one weight class can move up and immediately challenge for a world title at the next weight class. So right now, Andy Ruiz has that WBO heavyweight title. After the fight, whether it's Joshua or Ruiz, they're going to be mandated, if Usyk wants it, to fight them next. Now, if I'm Usyk, I might put that off a little bit. I'm not sure I'd want to go from Chaz Witherspoon to, say, Anthony Joshua. I think that's kind of a bit of a jump. But let's say Derek Chisora beats David Price. Let's say that happens. I'd put Usyk in with Chisora. That was kind of the plan all along. Or Joseph Parker, who had to pull out of that fight with Chisora. I would put Usyk in with Chisora, and if he, or with Parker, and if he wins either one of those fights, then I'd say he's ready to make the jump. You don't need to baby him. The guy's clearly talented enough to fight at the top level, but I'd be hesitant to go from a non-puncher at this stage like Chaz Witherspoon straight into Anthony Joshua.
Parker makes more sense to me than Chisora. But when you have defense and foot movement and pedigree, and you're fighting at the elite level, you're not getting hit as much as other fighters and top contenders and really solid good fighters. You're elite, and to land a punch, a powerful punch on an elite fighter is very difficult, especially when you have that pedigree that Usyk has. So even if he did fight guys like Joshua and Wilder and Fury, eventually he'll be able to take those punches. Right now he just needs to step in and get hit. Not solid get hit, because no one wants to get solid, punched right in the chin solid, especially in the heavyweight division. But you want to feel those punches roll off your shoulders. You want to feel them bouncing off your forearms, catch them with your gloves. You even want to get touched on in the side of the head. You want to feel that power, because you don't know how you're going to react to that power until you get rocked by it. And believe me, you don't always have to be hit cleanly to get stunned, to get rocked. Sometimes you can block a shot and it can barely slice, you know, slice through your guard, and you're rocked a little bit. You feel the little ants crawling on your legs, and you feel a little like, whoa, a little buzz. So he just needs to fill a couple of those in the heavyweight division, and I think he'll be ready for the huge punchers like Wilder and Joshua.
Can I tell you, I'm morbidly interested in Chisora versus David Price. Like, I'm kind of like David Price. It's not a cash out because I don't think Chisora can be a cash out, but this is definitely David Price's last stand. Like, and I'm fascinated to see if he has anything here. I mean, Chisora is really good against solid opponents, not so good against the top tier guys. And David Price has a shaky chin.
It doesn't make you morbid. It makes you a boxing fan. There's something that really entertains people that are strong punchers, but are susceptible to strong punchers. It's just like Fernando Vargas. You know, he can knock you out or get knocked out trying. So there's drama there. Nothing morbid about that.
I mean, it's just I don't think that's it's not a fight of top tier heavyweights. It's two guys that I think are both over the age of 35, but I'm fascinated. I think it's a terrific Chiefs support bout to the pro-grade Taylor fight October 26th. Like that we're talking about. It's not, you know, it's not an A-level type of event, but it is a strong second fight. More fights should have that type of fight that's on it, ultimately.
Not if you ask Chisora. Chisora believes he's the A-side.
I mean, he's not wrong. Like, you know, whether you know, belts are great, and the Muhammad Ali trophy is awesome, but Derek Chisora is selling those tickets. He's not wrong. That's what makes the A-side. If you sell tickets and you sell, you know, subscriptions on pay-per-view or whatever you're doing it on. Anyway, one other thing I want to hit on, and that's the guy, the Chiefs supporter this weekend, Dimitri Bivol. He is making his return to the ring. Bivol has been desperate to get a top opponent at 175 or 168 in the ring.
I don't think he's been desperate.
I've gotten those press releases. He's been calling everybody out.
Calling everybody out, but I don't think he's desperate. I think Demetrius Andrade is more like out of desperation. I think Bivol's more, he's been calm and patient. I think he knows that his time will come, and he's taking care of business, and he has gratitude, and he knows that his moment will come. I think desperate's the wrong word there.
Well, he's fighting a guy named Lennon Castillo who has never fought at the level that Bivol is. He's got a loss to Olympian. Marcus Brown. But Marcus Brown's not even.
And his other loss was a majority decision, so no shame in that.
No.
He's never been stopped.
You're right. He is a solid, solid guy, but I don't think he's in the class of Bivol. That's my question, though, for you. How good is Bivol? Like, how would you describe his talent?
He's special, man. He's really special. His fight with Joe Smith really impressed me, and his fight before that as well. I mean, he hasn't knocked out. Here's the thing. His last three fights, he hasn't got the knockout. When he was
nobody knocks out Joe Smith. Like, that's just the way it goes.
I knew that was coming, but Bivol does knock out people, especially when he was coming up in HBO. They were saying he was the next, you know, Gennady Golovkin, knocking everything in sight. Now, he does have that power, but as he's proving, he has more than that. And I love his temperament. I love his character. After the ring, he says, This is not power knockout all the time. It's chess. It's moving. It's angle. It's more. And I love that because he has that power to turn your lights out, but he's happy going to decision. And he's not going to be able to knock out everybody, especially when he starts fighting these better fighters like he has in his last three fights. So I think tomorrow is a good opportunity to get back to Saturday. Saturday's a good time to get back to the knockout streak because, you know, he's already fought the Chilembas he's already fought those good fighters. Now it's time to turn someone's lights off again, and I think this is a good opportunity for him to do it against a solid opponent who's never been stopped. Then you're going to get the people talking again.
Yeah, and look, he's going to have to fight probably one or two more solid opponents before he gets the fight that he wants. I mean, just based on the politics of it all and how he's aligned, I would guess that there's already been talk of lining him up for Sergey Kovalev once Kovalev gets done with his business with Canelo Alvarez. Assuming Kovalev loses, a Kovalev-Bivol fight, I think, would be significant still. And maybe
depends how Kovalev loses, because if he gets knocked out, especially to the body, I think it'll be the end of Kovalev.
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think this
Wanna
is
make
not,
a bet on that?
I don't think this is the end of Kovalev.
Because if he gets stopped to the body, I can promise you it's the end of him. Because once a fighter gets discovered, that's his Achilles heel, then he's done. He's shot for. That's it. I mean, you're a shot fighter.
I don't think you're giving Kovalev enough credit for the bounce back that he's done in his past. Like, he got beat up pretty good.
No, I am giving him credit. He's a Hall of Famer. He's great. All I'm saying is if he gets knocked out to the body, listen to me.
Whoa.
Yes, absolutely. Kovalev's a Hall of Famer. Yeah, in my book, absolutely.
What are your criteria for Hall of Fame? Like, what are we talking about here? Like,
let's not get into that. That's just, that's subjective.
It is, but like, well, right.
I think too many people are called Hall of Famers.
I think too many people are called Hall of Famers.
I think he's a Hall of Famer. Not first rate or whatever it is. First ballot. Think he's a Hall of Famer. Absolutely.
First of all, just by the pure logistics of it all, like, Kovalev's got a multi-fight deal with this Canelo one. Like, I think if he fights Canelo and loses, he's going to get a soft touch to come back and then Bivol.
But if he gets stopped again to the body, I don't think he comes back from
that. What makes the third time any different than the first two?
There you go. The third time. People know that's your weakness.
Charm? Like,
no, that's your weakness. Every fight is just going to aim for that. And believe me, man, you've never been hit to the body. It fucking hurts, and you remember that pain. It never goes. It's at the back of your mind. It literally stays with you your entire life. Once you get touched in that particular spot again, that pain just comes right back. You're not gonna be the same, especially at 36, 37 years old. He is done, in my opinion, if he gets stopped to the body. Kovalev.
I disagree.
We'll see.
I think he's back for two
more
fights.
We shall see.
I think Bivol stops him, and then it's over.
We shall see.
Well, then you can...
He almost retired not too long ago.
He didn't almost retire.
He said he was fed up with boxing.
You hear that kind
His
of stuff
outside also. Life was taking a toll on him. Too much stress, too much bullshit.
How many times I heard that though from boxers? Like, we think about retiring, they never actually do. You've heard it. You've been there.
Shit, I am there.
It's Spike O'Sullivan. Let's go.
No. I got a new one.
Who's your new one?
The 15-year anniversary of the Contenders coming up.
You want to fight
next
Peter
May 24th, Dunkin' Donut Center, Providence, Rhode Island. Me and Peter Manfredo, the trilogy.
What weight is
I'm
Peter
selling that to Eddie Hearn? Eddie Hearn, are you listening?
What weight is Peter Manfredo?
Who knows?
Right,
I'll go all the way to heavyweight.
You'll
for
go to heavyweight for Manfredo. All right, Sergio, we will see you Saturday night on DAZN.
No, I'm going to see you at the chess table downstairs.
All right. Well, you and I will see each other at the chess table. The fans listening will see you Saturday night on DAZN, the broadcast. That is going to be from the Wintrust Arena in Chicago. We'll have all the coverage of the B-ball fight. Then, of course, you've got Usyk making his debut in the heavyweight division. As always, Sergio, good to talk to you.
My man.